markets, let us put aside and make it clear. And we announced the names of the martyrs. This was the first surprise for the Israelis, and then the killer became confused. Imagine, on Sunday, after the martyrdom of the martyrs of Quneitra and the announcement, there was a new situation. The killers were in a difficult situation, and those who were killed were not confused, were not in a difficult situation, were clear, and I will come to this. We know where we're going, but the killers don't know where they're going. Okay. What is the excuse for the assassination? Let's go one by one. What's the excuse? What they said, what the Israelis said, or what they leaked by their commentators and by their editors, was there were several excuses, but they all lead to the same fundamental issue. One time they said that this group was attacked because they wanted to launch an attack in the occupied Golan Heights. I'm going to refer to the details that this group, these two cars, were in an area which is just 6 kilometers away from the separation line, and between them and the borderline, there are thousands of fighters from Al-Nusra Front. So these fighters in that particular location are coming to launch an operation against the Israelis. And they also said that they are coming to prepare for operations which will be launched in the aftermath. And they also said, the Israelis also said, they are coming to inspect or to prepare for putting together launching pads in the area. All of it evolves around one main issue: the resistance in the Golan Heights. This in of itself is a topic which I won't be able to speak about in this speech. It requires details which I will talk about later. But they assumed, this is what they said, that there is some kind of a resistance, some kind of a resistance structure, some kind of beginning of resistance, and therefore we must take the initiative and strike those people. That's what they said. It's not me analyzing, that's what they said. The big question which should be posed to everyone now, to the Syrian people and to the Syrian opposition, before the Syrian government, it should be asked to the Syrian opposition and the Lebanese people and the Palestinian people. I really hope that the Palestinian people, who are our partners completely, and we are their partners in blood and pain and in joy and sorrow and victory, everything, and all the people of the region, let them just take a look at this question, think about this question. What is at the border of Israel, on the borderline in the Golan Heights? What is there on that borderline where Israel occupies? From where it occupies until the last point where we have presence of the Syrian army on the other side. What exists in this area in 6 or 7 kilometers, in this range of 6 or 7 kilometers? In that area, we have Al-Nusra Front. Thousands of fighters who have tanks, who have also artillery, who have rockets, who have all kinds of weapons, and also have anti-tank weapons and huge amounts of explosives, and also military positions and military fortifications. Now, Al-Nusra Front, who is it? Let us also remind those who don't remember. It is the Syrian branch of Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, which is blacklisted and placed on the terrorist list of the United Nations and the US and the West and the Arab states. The Syrian branch of Al-Qaeda, designated internationally and westernly, or western, from Western countries and Arab countries, as a terrorist group, has a huge military presence between the Syrian Arab army and the border fence in the Golan Heights, occupied Golan Heights. Netanyahu doesn't feel any anxiety any fear regarding this presence. Yalon, who says he is somewhat, he's a strategist, he says why it's a normal car and not an armored car. Yalon doesn't feel any concern regarding this presence. No, they even help. They help them, they provide air cover for them, and they open the borders for the wounded so they can get treated in Israeli hospitals, and they also inspect and visit the wounded. Netanyahu personally goes and visits those wounded. Israel, which doesn't feel any concern whatsoever regarding those people, but it takes a very dangerous decision because it feels concern regarding two civilian cars transporting seven fighters who have no rockets or explosives. They only have their own individual weapons. A question to the Arab world, to the Arab people, to the resistance movements, to all sides. Some reached a level of hatred whereby they said, what happened, happened. I have a problem called the Syrian regime. I have a problem which is Iraq, Egypt. You must, if you want to forget Israel, forget it. We don't want to forget Israel. We can't forget Israel. If you want to forget the Palestinian people, you can. We can't and we won't. We shall not forget the Palestinian people. This is our culture, the culture of our fathers and grandfathers and our children and grandchildren. Our children, by their martyrdom, are reflecting this path. And wait, and you'll see that the grandchildren, our grandchildren, will also reflect this meaning by their martyrdom. So this is a very big question. What's the answer? It's something which you must stand and take a look at. Anyway, after the operation, a lot was written about it, its significance and who it targeted. I will stop here and speak about the Shabaa Farms. Just I want to make one more point in this topic. What was required, what the Israelis assumed would happen after the operation, what those who loved Israel assumed would happen after the operation, was that Hezbollah would be in a state of loss, would be in a state of anxiety, would not know what it wanted to do, where should it hide, what could it do. And there were a lot of evaluations made about the significance of this assassination. Before I speak about the next subject, let me express our feelings honestly. And this was expressed by many of our colleagues during their gatherings and during the meetings. The operation, the assassination operation in Quneitra, there is a painful side, which is the humanitarian side. Yes, we do feel pain. If some people imagine we don't feel pain, of course we feel pain and sorrow. And we do feel sorrow. And the families of the martyrs feel sorrow when they cry. I tell them, cry, there's no problem. Don't say we don't want to cry. No, cry. Now, someday, if I don't cry, this is related to the media war, psychological war, but far away from the cameras, I cried. I'm a father, just like all other fathers. So, at the humanitarian level, when it comes to humane fear, of course, we lost our beloved ones. Now, regarding all other aspects, everything that happened, everything related to this catastrophe, we don't view it except as being a blessing, except as having benefits, except as being something good, a gift from God, God's kindness. Let the Israelis think in such a way. Let's set the human, our own human feelings aside. Everything else is positive and also goodness, gracious from God for our path, for our resistance, for our cause, for our region. And here as well, we always draw our lessons from Karbala because it is the event which summarizes a lot of values and meanings. Here also, we take our lessons from Sayyida Zainab, may peace be upon her, when she countered Ubaydullah bin Ziyad. He asked, how do you view what God did to your brother? How you were slaughtered, cut to pieces. What did Sayyida Zainab say? May peace be upon her. This is our culture. I didn't see anything but beauty. I didn't see anything but beauty. Those are a group who God said must fight, and then they went and fought. They did the task. Of course, though the other group will be punished, but look at the courage. The courage of Imam Hussein and his family. If we compare it to the Quneitra and other battles, it's nothing. Of course, in Quneitra we feel sorrow regarding the loss of our beloved, but we say, just like Sayyida Zainab, may peace be upon her, said, we didn't see anything but beauty. Our seven brothers, they are a group who God said must fight, and so they went and did what they should do. And between us and this enemy, we have this life and the aftermath. From the very beginning, let me now speak about the next topic. I will take some extra time today because I'm the only speaker. I take my share on the share of the one who usually speaks before me. From the very beginning, after the announcement of the assassination and the revelation of the names of the martyrs, the enemy and the friend and the neutral side, they were all preoccupied with analysis and expectations. There was a central question. Will Hezbollah respond or will it be silent? And if Hezbollah does respond, when and where and how? And what will be the limits of this response, and what are the dangerous repercussions of this response? These questions from Sunday until Wednesday. Wednesday we relieved all the experts to answer, but until Wednesday these questions were being asked. But the bigger issue was with the Israelis. The bigger discussions were amongst the Israelis. What we read in Lebanon and the region, we read a lot of studies and expectations, some analyzed in a neutral way, regardless of liking us or hating us, some analyzed out of their love for us, some analyzed out of their hatred for us. Anyway, whatever be, let's put this aside. The questions which were answered, which were posed, have been answered. But the bigger issue was amongst the Israelis. What were the Israelis were subject to after Hezbollah announced the assassination in Quneitra? This is the important issue which I want to talk about before I refer to the Shub'a farms. You are supposed to be a superpower regionally, and you killed deliberately. Not by mistake or not by coincidence, no, you took a decision, Israel. How did the Israelis deal with it? Now, I don't want to make explanations, but I'll refer to some important points. The way they dealt with the operation in the media and politically, was it them, not them? No, not us. Did they discuss it? Is it assumed? It's not clear yet. As I said, I still don't know if the Israelis have officially claimed responsibility and said we did it. But for 10 days, they continued in such a way where it wasn't clear. The way also they dealt with the martyrdom of Muhammad Ali Allah Dadi. Were they surprised? Were they not surprised that there was an Iranian general also amongst that group? Were they confused? What should they say? Sending messages by the media and some close related commentators. Maybe some officials won't speak, but the officials might tell their friends who are commentators to express the stance. Israel was in a state of alert, especially in the northern areas and in the Golan Heights, and sending the Iron Domes to the north. They left one only in Gaza, but they brought all the other iron domes to us in the north. Measures in the north, precautionary measures, also state of alert at the intelligence level 100%. And from Sunday until the Wednesday, if you go to the Lebanese-Palestinian borders, would you find any farmer, soldier, military vehicle, tanks, car? No, you wouldn't find anything. Even in the settlements, they all went and hid. They said there's nothing, but they went and they hid. And they were afraid.